Welcome to Big Broadway Energy, the podcast with your host, Stephen Reardon. That's me. It's that time again, friends. That time wherein I shamelessly and with fervor hijack my own podcast for my very own benefit. And I'm not ashamed. I'm not ashamed because everyone is welcome on BDE to plug their shows, and I'm no different. But there is good news. I'm not here by myself. I am joined today by the executive artistic director of a place called Power Stories. It's in Tampa, where the show is currently being produced, and she is also the director of said production. She is Dr. Claire Ann Despain. Claire Ann, welcome to Big Broadway Energy.
Thanks for having me, Stephen. I'm thrilled to be here.
I'm so excited you're sitting here with me. Claire Ann and I are working with a fabulous cast and a fabulous stage manager for a staged reading of a play called Conscience. And we're going to get into Power Stories a little bit later, what their mission is, what they do. But this play tells the story of real time in history. Power Stories focuses on real times in history. And I think all Americans need to see it, especially now. Claire Ann, give us a quick synopsis, an elevator pitch of Conscience, if you will.
So it tells the story of Margaret Chase Smith, who was a woman senator from Maine, the first woman senator from Maine, and also the first woman elected to the House and the Senate. And it's set in the 1950s, and a lot of folks haven't heard of Margaret Chase Smith, but they've certainly heard of her primary political adversary, Joe McCarthy, played by, oh gosh, what was the name of the actor playing Joe McCarthy?
Do you remember? I don't remember his name, but he's very loud.
He's very loud, and he's a very good. It's Stephen Reardon. Those who can't see me pointing.
True. Yes, it is the story of Margaret Chase Smith and Joe McCarthy and what went down at that time in Washington.
Yeah, exactly. So the 1950s, we're talking about the Red Scare, the Lavender Scare. It's in the height of the developing tensions around the Cold War. And the play takes place just after they discover that Russia has detonated an atomic bomb. And so there's a nationwide paranoia, particularly in the government, about communists infiltrating the U.S. government. And a man named Joe McCarthy recognizes this paranoia and sees a way to further his own career. Which it's weird describing this to you since you're playing him and you know this better than anyone.
We're describing it to our
listeners at home.
Yes.
And anyway, so Margaret Chase Smith takes a look at what's happening and it really troubles her. Now, the thing to understand about Margaret Chase Smith is that she's a Republican too. They are in the same party. She is fiercely anti-communist. She very much believes in a strong defense and all of these things, but she doesn't approve of McCarthy's tactics. And so she decides that she needs to say something. She's got to speak truth to power. And the way that this materializes is through what is called the Declaration of Conscience. So she gets up in front of the Senate, and she is the only senator from either party with the courage to do. She gets up, she makes this Declaration of Conscience that basically says, this is going to be disastrous if we continue down the route that McCarthy is taking us. She says that these aims are really important, but the way that it's happening through smear and innuendo and making unjustifiable claims that have no evidence, no basis in fact, simply to gin up political power is not the way to go, and that it will have lasting effects in America.
I wonder if she was right.
And here's the thing, audiences might want to come see the show and see what resonates.
100%. I really do think that every American should see it, regardless of your politics. And I think sometimes plays like this, if you believe one way or another, feel like they're slanted or feel like they have a bent to them. What I love about Conscience is that it really does feel very historically accurate. And I'll tell you, I didn't know much about Joe McCarthy before I took this gig. I knew about the House Un-American Activities Committee, which is what most Americans know him for, which is the time in Washington where they brought lots of Hollywood people and actors and writers and producers to in front of Congress to basically accuse them of being a communist. And it really destroyed so many careers and so many families and so many loved ones. And the crusade was more than that, though. And I think he, to your point earlier about McCarthy finding this as an opportunity to gain political power, it really is less about the cause and more about political power. And he saw a way to make his very unpopular time in the Senate become the most popular thing at the time. It was like the hottest subject in Washington.
Absolutely. He was a genius at garnering attention, and he was less interested in governing than he was in being heard, being on television, although we hear he doesn't have a face for it. But that's not accurate in the casting. Stephen absolutely has a face for television.
I don't know. I've been saying on this podcast for more than a year, I have the face for radio, so I'm perfect in this seat. But I think it just reminds me that I'm right.
Hard to disagree, because people should come see you on stage in conscience.
It is such an, it's such a fun, scary, horrible role to play. And I love being able to step outside of who I am as a human to be this other thing. That's what actors thrive on. That's what they love. But we've said this, and I've said it in rehearsal more than once, like, I'm going home with the ick, man.
Yeah, it's a major ick.
You think, this is like Disney villain stuff, but then you do the research and you're like, oh no, this is exactly what happened. This is exactly who he was. Margaret Chase Smith, being portrayed by Tampa Bay favorite Roxanne Fay. I know she is someone you've worked with in the past. Let's let the listener know, if they're not aware of Roxanne, like what, who she is and why she is so perfect to play Margaret Chase Smith.
So Roxanne is, she's been described as Tampa Bay's Meryl Streep, and for good reason. She is a brilliant chameleon who can slide into a role and inhabit it in a way that is absolutely riveting.
Riveting.
And something I love about Roxanne, and something that she said to me, is as she's thinking about the role she's going to do, she asks herself, do I need to say these words? And that helps guide some of her choices. And that's really what brought her to Power Stories, because of the kinds of stories we tell. Strong women who are speaking to their historical moment in a way that really matters. And of course, this season, we're focusing on women who have done that for the greater good. And the Declaration of Conscience, Margaret Chase's actual words in the mouth of Roxanne Fay, it's chilling. It's deeply moving. But I have to say, the other thing I love about Roxanne's nuanced portrayal of Margaret Chase Smith is that she beautifully captures this brilliant woman's wit. Like, there are parts that are laugh out loud funny as Roxanne finds the moments where Margaret Chase Smith finds a way to wittily describe something that is absolutely horrific. And in many ways, she speaks what we're all thinking, mm-hmm. but in this deeply articulate way. And let me fangirl for a minute. There are moments where I'm just sitting there just fallen over in my chair, because she is so wonderful to watch.
She is, and she's wonderful to play against. When you said chameleon, I thought you were going to say comedian, because she's so funny.
Oh, she's so funny.
She's so funny, and I think what she brings a humanity, not just to Margaret Chase Smith, but everything I've ever seen her in, she's a small and mighty actor, but she plays these roles where you're like, she's going to burn this house down.
Oh, yeah.
She's so good.
She is staggeringly good, and such a love of a human.
She really is a lovely human. I agree. I want to talk a little bit about Power Stories. You brought it up just a second ago, but I love a theater with a mission. How did you come to Power Stories? What was Power Stories' genesis? How did it become what it is and how it still thrives?
So Power Stories was founded by Fran Powers about 26 years ago. And part of the key genesis of that is she would ask women, tell me your story. And women would say, well, I don't really have a story. I'm not that interesting. And that drove her nuts because she knew it wasn't true. So she started developing these workshops, which we still do to this day. We're getting ready to launch another session of Seek and Speak Your Power Story. So she developed these workshops to help women find their story and figure out how to tell it. And that's really where Power Stories began. Real women telling their true stories. And as that happened, she also happened to have a background in theater, and she started to expand and create shows out of these stories. And so it grew and grew. And then several years ago, I became aware of Power Stories, and people had been saying it in my ear for a while.
I bet.
Just because I like to say I popped out of the womb a little feminist. I remember my first meeting with Fran. I emailed her and I said, hey, I'm interested in getting involved. Let's talk. And we sat down and we had a really great conversation. This was several years ago. And I walked away thinking, I want to work with her. Mm. And fortunately, I guess she walked away thinking the same thing. And so over the years, we found some opportunities actually initially during COVID, working on a Voices of Truth festival that she started. And that she also started a Voices of Women festival. And then we got to talking and she was like, I'm ready to bring on an artistic director. I'm ready to set that piece aside, focus on the executive stuff. Do you want to come and do it? And it was like, yes, of course. Yes, please, please. And then this past March, Fran retired. And so I stepped fully into running this beautiful company with a mission that feels purpose-built for me. So it's absolutely thrilling.
It's your very own power story.
In a lot of ways, yeah. In a lot of ways, yeah. We're all full. Several power stories, absolutely. And so I'm going to take that opportunity just to plug the Voices of Women Theater Festival really quick, which is something we do every March. We're about to do our seventh or eighth. And that's, we do that every March, and we help women playwrights develop their work. And it culminates in 1 week of these readings of full-length plays. And we just opened up our slot for local playwrights for 10-minute shorts. And those submissions are open right now. Yeah, if you are a local woman playwright, you've got something you're working on, or you're a local woman who wants to try writing a play, this is what this is built for, is to give you a chance to try it in a small bite and see if you find your passion, find your power, and come on over. We're going to help you get where you need to go, because we know that aside from non-binary and trans playwrights, women are the least produced demographic. But you want to know who makes up the majority of theater audiences?
Tell me.
It's women.
You're kidding.
No.
No, I just saw that. I think Playbill just released an article talking about who's keeping Broadway open, and it's women.
It's women, and it's generally women over 40,
yep.
Which is why for our full-length submissions, we actually have a category specifically for women playwrights over 40.
Amazing.
So that's what we believe in.
I love it. People want a safe space to tell their stories, right? They don't know how to start maybe sometimes, or they have too much information and what has to be whittled down. You need dramaturgy. You need people to say, listen, you're in a safe space. We believe in you. Here's what we're seeing. Let's work this out together.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That's so great.
And that's what we're here to do.
I love it. Okay. So your career is vast and you have had an opportunity to work all over the country. You got your PhD in dramatic arts, which is so badass. I can't even tell you. I went to the American Academy of Dramatic Arts and got my not PhD, and I'm very jealous. So congratulations to that. I love a smart artist, and I'm so inspired by them. What got you to Tampa Bay, and what keeps you here in Tampa Bay?
I met my husband, James, while I was getting my doctorate in Santa Barbara. And as I was beginning to wrap up my degree, I thought, oh, I'm going to do a national job search, right, for a faculty position, because that's where I thought I was headed. And we were like, okay, where are we going to do that from? Because it's really expensive to live in Santa Barbara. And James was from Tampa, and he owned a house here. And it was like, okay, so we're paying a mortgage and rent right now. Maybe let's just pay one, since my graduate funding is going away and I need a job. So we came down here, and I wanted to make theater. And so I started to make some inroads. And now what keeps me here, one, power stories, because it's a perfect fit for me. And two, I keep telling folks, the people I want to play with are here. There are so many incredible humans and incredible artists in this area who are interested in the same things I am and who want to play. So that's what keeps me here.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. We're so lucky. I say this all the time. A city our size sometimes has a couple of professional theaters, one or two community theaters, and it's always the same 10 people in every play. Here is not that. And when I started my theater company, I'm like, I'm doing it back in St. Pete. I love this place. I love being here. I love the artists here. I feel like I'm at home here. There's something about it that just makes me never want to leave again. And I lived in New York City for many years, and I was like, it's time to go back home. And I'm more artistic now than I've ever been in my whole life. I'm more creative now. And I think it is about the people and the community. And you're right. There's just so much great talent in St. Pete and Tampa.
Just so much. And good people.
Exactly,
like,
right.
Not just talent, like good
great
people
you want to work with and spend time with.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That includes our other cast members. We didn't talk about them. But
oh my gosh, could we please?
Yes, let's just briefly just give shout outs to our amazing actors. I want to talk a little bit about the characters just real, real quick. But I because they are the characters that round out this show.
Okay. So Anna Lawrence Perduto plays Miss Jean Kerr, who is McCarthy's assistant or office girl. But what's interesting about her is that she's actually quite a brilliant political mind in her own right, and we get to see that in the play. At the same time, we see, and this happened in real life, she chooses to marry Joe McCarthy. She becomes Mrs. McCarthy. And that journey is really fascinating to see her navigate that. And Anna Lauren does a beautiful job of discovering the nuances of who she is and who she has to appear to be to different people, which I think is absolutely fascinating. And then speaking of folks who have to appear a certain way, Mike Bringer plays Bill Lewis, who was Margaret Chase Smith's political assistant. And he's a brilliant political mind who sees in her incredible potential. And so he goes to work for her and supports her in a number of ways. But he also has a secret. He is a confirmed bachelor who lives with his parents. And that's really what the historical record reflects. The play takes it a little bit further in exploring who Bill Lewis might have been. And this helps us explore the Lavender Scare within the context of the Red Scare and the ways in which a homophobia was used to target people for other people's political gain.
Wow, that sounds a little familiar in 2026. Everything old is new again.
I mean,
yeah.
Seriously.
It's shocking. It's shocking how we repeat ourselves in this country and in society. We just keep on forgetting and we keep on falling for the same tricks and we keep on being afraid. And it just is fascinating. And there's a moment in this play where McCarthy confronts Lewis in a very uncomfortable way. And it again reminds me as a gay man in the world in 2026, reminds me of the false sense of safety we have in the world still and how you can be confronted with really terrible things to scare you into submission. And that's still happening today, right? It's such a great play, y'all. I really want you to come see it. But last question, Dr. Despain. I like to ask all my guests what art means to them. So tell me, how does art affect you? What does it mean to you? How do you use it in your everyday life?
To me, it's obviously, since I identify as an artist, that is, for me, my whole being. And I think the most important art form that I'm engaged in is storytelling. And for me, stories are everything. Give me a story. There's always a story going on for me. I want to hear it. I want to read it. I want to help stage it. Though that's an audiobook in the car, novel at bedtime. If I'm crocheting, it's an audiobook or it's something story-driven on the television. Stories are how we figure out who we are in relationship to the world around us.
Yes.
And that has been true since I was small. Yeah, that's it. Stories.
I love
stories
it so much. Everywhere. And I'm so happy I finally get to work with you. I've known about your work for a long time. I work with Erica Sutherland at the studio at 620, my artistic home. She's another genius human that has just changed my life in the last 2 years. So I just love working with smart women. They really have affected me and changed the way I work, changed the way I see the world. And I'm just so thankful to women who refuse to be silenced. I love women who refuse to be told what to do. They tell us what is possible. And I just thank you for all the work that you do. And you're such a great director. I'm having so much fun.
That's really kind. Thank you.
The first show of the next season at Studio at 620. Yeah, let's just plug it quickly.
Just plug it quickly. That's a co-production between the Studio at 620 and Power Stories. Erica and I love each other, love working together. We did Cadillac Crew last year.
You sure did. It was brilliant.
It was so good, directed by Erica. And she's hopping into the director's seat again to do The Wash, which is about the 1881 Atlanta washerwomen's strike. Tickets are on sale now, October 1st through October 11th.
And we will have cast and crew from The Wash here on Big Broadway Energy, so don't worry about that. You'll hear all about it when it gets a little closer. Conscience is on stage at Stageworks in Tampa for one weekend only, August 14th through the 16th. For more information on tickets, times, all that jazz, please head over to powerstories.com. You can also get more information on all the different programs Power Stories does from powerstories.com if you're interested in potentially working with them in any way. Dr. Claren Despain, thank you for being here, and thank you for doing the important work Power Stories continues to do.
Thanks for having me. It's a joy.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Hey friends, did you know that Big Broadway Energy is nominated for Best Podcast in Tampa Bay? It's true. If you'd like to vote for the pod or RadioSimpete.com for Best Radio Station or Soundscapes for Best Radio Show, if you want to vote for any of us, head over to botbtampabay.com. That's a horrible website. But just Google Best of the Bay, will ya? Voting is live till August 30th, and you can vote every day. We here at RadioSaintPete.com would love your support. Thank you, dear listener, for joining us on Big Broadway Energy. Until next time, be kind, be curious, and keep creating. Bye, everybody.